25 years ago, the movie Space Jam mixed animation and live action, and appropriately enough, starred both Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan.
Now, Warner Brothers is releasing Space Jam, A New Legacy, and it stars Bugs Bunny and LeBron James. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today, we are talking about Space Jam, A New Legacy, on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Aisha from his home in Baltimore is Andrew Limbong. Andrew is a reporter for NPR's Culture Desk. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, what up?
It's great to have you here.
Yeah.
So the plot of Space Jam, A New Legacy is actually kind of Byzantine, with an evil algorithm played by Don Cheadle. He kidnaps LeBron James and his son Dom, who is a prodigious video game designer played by Cedric Joe. But really, the plot is just window dressing for a great big wacky basketball game in which LeBron and Dom are on opposing teams. Dom has on his team a group of wildly augmented basketball stars, people like Diana Taurasi and Anthony Davis, while LeBron has on his side the lovable misfit Looney Tunes gang. Now, I was never a Space Jam guy, so I'm counting on Andrew and Aisha to lead me through its many intricacies.
Okay.
Help me with all this world building. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. What is your relationship with Space Jam 1.0, and what did you think of this very big, very loud sequel?
Oh, brother. Okay. So for the first Space Jam, just a quick family background. So like my dad was really into basketball and my sister was really into basketball. You know, growing up, she like played like on varsity and all that like jock stuff. But I didn't get that gene, I guess, or whatever it is. When Space Jam came out, it like meant a lot to me because I like sort of like got what the fuss was about basketball. Sort of like, I was like, oh, I get it. I see what they see in it, you know? And it was like, it was a way for me to sort of like connect with them and really speak their language as much as I guess like they could. So this one, I came into it thinking it was going to be, you know, whatever. And the jokes were funnier, right? I had a better time than I thought it would. Just the thing that I couldn't get out of my head and the thing that sort of stopped me from really investing in it was like, oh, this is what hell looks like. You know, it was like, this is just like all these mega corporations buying other mega corporations to, you know, eventually form one mega corporation. It's like, oh, this is the product of that. And the product itself is like serviceable and fine, but I can't help but like feel bad consuming it. It's like a bunch of like Protestant guilt sort of weighs on me as I consume it, you know?
Yes, I very much know.
Is that a bit much? I don't know.
No, that's very accurate, I think.
Yeah.
Well, Aisha, did you have a similar experience?
Yeah, so I was, what, 8 when this movie came out? And so I was very much prime target audience for this movie. I, like Andrew, was not really a basketball person, but it was impossible at that period to not be swept up in the basketball allure. And so my dad took me to see this movie when it came out on VHS. I got it for Easter. But the soundtrack for the original movie was like really what I was obsessed with. Like that was the thing that I maybe saw the movie in full like a couple times. But like I listened to that soundtrack all the time. Always skipped over I Believe I Can Fly. Even before I knew anything about R. Kelly, I hated that song so much. I still hate that song to this day. That song was inescapable for like 10 years. The original movie, and I went back and rewatched it in preparation for this, is so, if you are over the age of 10 or 11, I really don't think you can enjoy it. I think that the Looney Tunes gags in that are very bland and not exciting. They feel just like everything is built around this like myth of Michael Jordan. But what I appreciate about it is that it's just kind of this sort of simple story. It's just the Looney Tunes, and then it's just like Michael Jordan and all his pals. Whereas this feels like hell, but also like a theme park. It's like, we don't just get the Looney Tunes. We get all of these things that have already been seen in other movies like Ready Player One, which is also Warner Brothers' product. Like there's a moment where all of these characters descend into the arena to watch the game. And I was like, this looks like an exact shot from Ready Player One. Like, there's Iron Giant. It just felt so manufactured and packaged and referential in all of the worst ways. And it did make me feel icky. Like, I felt like it's not working for me. And so Space Jam, A New Legacy, I guess it's a little bit hipper, but it also just feels a little bit more corporate. way more corporate.
Yeah. And I also, even hipper, I mean, there is a scene in which Porky Pig raps. So I'm not
well,
sure.
For the record, Bugs Bunny raps on the original Space Jam soundtrack. Yeah. But which I think was ghostwritten by Jay-Z. So, you know. So, yeah.
So I have a different relationship with Space Jam. I am older than you guys. It came out when I was in my early to mid-20s. I was a big basketball fan, but I was much more excited about He Got Game because it had Ray Allen, and I was a Bucks fan. So watching Michael Jordan in a movie was like, I don't want to watch more Michael Jordan. I watch enough of that guy beating my team. So I didn't necessarily have a big basketball connection to it. My connection to the Looney Tunes came from being absolutely obsessed with Warner Brothers cartoons that reran endlessly on Saturday mornings when I was a kid. And so I love the original Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Roadrunner cartoons that I had seen on Saturday mornings. And so by the time Space Jam came out, Bugs Bunny was voiced by Billy West. You know, obviously Mel Blanc wasn't available. And so the original Space Jam to me felt like it was going to be a kind of a cross-section of two things I didn't care about. And so I skipped Space Jam. And in preparing for this discussion, I was asked by my producers, don't watch, because I've never seen the first Space Jam. They said, don't watch the first Space Jam until you've seen Space Jam A New Legacy, and then see if you can follow it. And so, so my experience was really to come into this franchise almost entirely cold. And I had a very similar reaction to what you guys had.
Okay, good. Which is, it'd be crazy if like, and I loved it.
And I thought loved it. Well, the two movies are very, very dissimilar, other than the fact that they have these kind of bastardized umpteenth generation Looney Tunes in them. Yeah. They're completely different movies. They don't really even feel like they're that much in the same cinematic universe. They're very, very different. Space Jam A New Legacy is a true summer movie. It is very, very bloated. It is very loud. It is a million different pieces of IP just kind of clanging off of each other. And I had that same feeling of like, I'm watching basically like a 2-hour Nike commercial. Like I'm watching a 2-hour long Super Bowl ad. As such, like it's throwing so much at the screen that there are bits that I found entertaining, but I just never felt like, other than the LeBron James stuff and LeBron James and his family, I felt like I wasn't really watching anything real. I wasn't watching anything that felt like it was part of any kind of contained universe. It all just felt like a brand showcase in search of a movie.
Well, can we talk about that aspect for a second? Because I think like, obviously, this is a vanity project.
For who?
Well, that's the thing. It's like it's a battle between the vanity of LeBron James and the vanity of Warner Brothers. Like yeah. They are duking it out at different times. They are competing for this space. But what I find interesting about this is that this is very much trying to cast LeBron as like the family man in a way that the original Space Jam didn't really at all try to do. You see a few moments where Michael Jordan is with his family at the beginning and then at the end, but he's not necessarily like, oh, I'm stuck in this world. I really need to get back to my family in the way that this movie is. And it actually reminded me a bit of themes from Hook, because in Hook, you have Captain Hook, who is basically luring Peter's son away from him and is basically giving him all of the attention that the kid is not getting from his father. His father is putting him down. And LeBron James, this whole storyline is about him not understanding why his son wants to build video games instead of play basketball. And Don Cheadle, who I have to say, he is the one highlight of this movie. Clearly, yeah, he's just doing the Charlize Theron in Fast and Furious, where he's, I am the villain, and I'm going to play this up to the umpteenth degree, and I'm going to love it. My name is Algie Rhythm. Like, it's just so ludicrous. And yet, I appreciated that he was not phoning it in. He's the best actor in this entire movie. But this whole vanity project thing, I think, is just really interesting to think about, because when you reach that certain level, you have these superstars creating these things. I think of obviously the other Space Jam, but you also have something like Moonwalker and Michael Jackson, which is, there are also elements of that in this, which I just think are really fascinating. And I'm curious as to what you think about this as a legacy builder for LeBron.
Does he need it? Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
I mean, Michael Jordan didn't really need it either.
That's true. Yeah. At a certain point, you just do it to do it. But I think the family stuff, I feel like it worked for me. Any sort of like disconnected father son, the father doesn't understand why his son is such a, like, a nerd. And then he finally gets it. I was like, oh, I should. I shouldn't be feeling this way at this stupid movie.
Wait, did Space Jam make you cry, Andrew?
Listen, no. I don't know. You know that like tingling you get like at the bridge of your nose, like right before it happens? You know what I mean? It's like that. It got to like that level. Like no full on like water, but like I was like, oh boy.
I mean, obviously, it's somewhat phoned in terms of like the overall feel of the movie. You're not there to watch LeBron James bond with someone playing as.
I thought he was good at that. I thought he was better at that stuff than he was at the jokes.
Well, I mean, LeBron James has been good in. You know, he's funny in Trainwreck. Like LeBron James has an enormous amount of charisma that transcends the charisma of being one of the greatest basketball players of all time. Like he does have a certain actorly charisma to him that makes him able to pull that stuff off. Yeah. I thought that stuff worked fine. It did, I think, add to the feeling that the first Space Jam doesn't have, which is this movie felt very long to me. I think a lot of that is coming from the sheer just amount of the family stuff that it feels the need to kind of shoehorn into this very bloated concept.
Well, the Space Jam itself, like the actual battle, takes up, I don't know, I want to say around 30 to 40 minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just so long and protracted. And there's several acts. I also, at this point in the movie, had to like go to the bathroom really badly. And I kept thinking to myself, okay, this has to be where they win, right? This has to be the end. Nope, there's two more acts. And I was like, what is happening? I kept looking at my watch like, we've already hit the 90-minute mark. Why are we still going?
The first one, from an animation standpoint, is a little bit more in the family of like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where it's mixing live action and that kind of cell animation. This is throwing a lot more CGI, a lot more 3D computer animation at you. How did you guys feel like the animation worked in this movie?
So I think it's also important to say like the conceit in the Space Jam isn't basketball. It's like a video game version of basketball, right? And so like part of the graphic design is like video game language, which just added, I think, to the sense of numbness you get from like overstimulation, you know? I was just so overwhelmed by all the sights. And I also don't really understand why. So they're cell animated for a portion of it, right? And then they get turned into CGI, right? And I wasn't quite sure why. Don Cheadle just thought that they were ugly and needed to look better. Was that the point?
He's Algie Rhythm. He knows what they want. And the kids want 3D because that's all they know.
Yeah. So sometimes like CGI gets like too real. It's like, all right, I don't need like a hairy Bugs Bunny, guys. Like, I don't need to see that.
Yeah, I think I had that reaction too, where it feels less soulful. This movie also is just throwing so much at the wall. There are just cameos zinging out of everywhere, and not even cameos, but just like Warner Brothers IP tucked into the margins of scenes. Like the fact that this movie removes Pepe Le Pew from the Warner Brothers universe, but keeps in characters from A Clockwork Orange.
So weird. So weird. And I also felt when it came to the animation, I felt like they were going for some Into the Spider-Verse where they were trying to jump around and try these very different animation styles. But whereas with Into the Spider-Verse, it was very much specific to the story, it was less so here. And it created that sort of chaotic overstimulation that I think just bogs that whole entire universe down.
What did you guys think of the refresh that they gave the character of Lola Bunny? So Lola Bunny in the first Space Jam, I would say, is problematic. They have revised Lola Bunny to be less sexualized, and now, as played by Zendaya, more
Wonder Woman-y.
Let's just say less sexualized.
I mean, she still has a human woman's hips and boobs. So I which is just weird. Look, Lola, to me, there were clearly things that they were trying to do to correct or at least be more hip to the times. Like, obviously there were WNBA players yes. now, like mm-hmm. Diana Taurasi. So that was cool to see, but I was kind of like, oh, all right, this is still a manly world mostly.
Yeah. But it's
so.
Still there. Like Bugs Bunny is still in love with her, right? If I remember like the second yeah. movie correctly, like his main drive and like when she shows up, there's still like Goo Goo Gaga for her. So it's like,
oh yeah,
not that much hasn't really changed, right? Just because she's not in a crop top anymore, you know. I don't think that it's like great job, guys, you did it.
we fixed the problem. Well, you can find Space Jam: A New Legacy in theaters and streaming on HBO Max for the next month or so. You can also, of course, find Space Jam streaming in several places. Tell us what you think about Space Jam and Space Jam A New Legacy. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it'll be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Kind of like Taylor Swift choosing a cardigan on a chilly day. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Blue Moon. How many times during the pandemic did you hear a friend say, "When this is over, we should get a beer"? Now is the time to make good on that promise, and Molson Coors is here to help. Your first Blue Moon is on them. To learn how to redeem your free beer, go to timeforthatbeer.com/rebate. Blue Moon. Celebrate responsibly. Blue Moon Brewing Co., Golden, Colorado Ale.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Andrew Limbong, what's making you happy this week, buddy?
All right, so I think what's making me happy this week is a song by Kenny Hoopla called Estella. For people who don't know who he is among this crop of like a Hot Topic era emo pop punk revivalist that Travis Barker from Blink-182 is working with. People in that universe are like MGK, Lil Huddy, the TikTok star. I think Jaden, you know, is all in that family. Willow Smith.
Is Machine Gun Kelly so famous that you can just say MGK?
I think so. The guy just got like a big GQ article, dude. Hell yeah. Everybody's in like the Kardashian realm, you know, now that Travis Barker is dating one. Everybody's all intertwined, I think. But this song, Estella by Kenny Hoopla, I mean, it's a perfect 2-minute heartsick, overly emotional, like Paramore / Jawbreaker, you know, worship emo jams that is extremely up my alley. It's so extra. It's so melodramatic and over the top. I think there's a post-chorus refrain and the line goes, I just die at the thought of being alive at the same time as you. It's like, oh, what?
So emo.
It's so much, and I love it, and it's so good. And then, like, there's one video in it where where he does, like, a sick backflip, and that's tight. And so that's making me really happy this week.
So that's Kenny Hoopla's new song, Estella. Thank you, Andrew Limbong. Aisha Harris, what's making you happy this week?
I'm also bringing some music or music adjacent making me happy this week content. And that would be the fact that Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis have released their first album. They are legends. They have produced famously, I think their most famous collaborator is Janet Jackson, but they worked with everyone from Prince and The Time to, you know, Usher. So they have been all over the place. They have created some of the greatest songs, greatest pop songs of all time. And for the first time ever, they are now front and center, sort of. I mean, the weird thing about these types of albums is that it's their album, but they're not singers. They're not performers in that way.
Right. Kind of like Quincy Jones used to do.
Yes, it's exactly like Quincy Jones. And so on this new album, Jam and Lewis Volume 1, they collaborate with Mary J. Blige, Boyz II Men, Mariah Carey. But what's really making me happy is an interview they did with Vulture, with Craig Jenkins Vulture. And they just talked about all the different collaborations they've done over the years. They have so many great nuggets about working with Michael Jackson and Janet on Scream, Bobby Brown, and how Bobby Brown would be really quick and finish his takes because he wanted to go to the strip club. He has like some great notes about Patty Austin. It's a really encompassing, fun retrospective of their career. And I highly recommend, if you love those types of nuggets about your favorite pop stars, to check out this interview with Craig Jenkins and Vulture. And we will put a link to that in our newsletter. And also check out Jam and Lewis Volume 1. It's really good, like grown and sexy music. And as I enter my grown and sexy age of my mid to late 30s, I am jamming to that kind of music even more than usual. So
nice. Yeah. Thank you, Aisha Harris. So what's making me happy this week? So for about 40 years, I have been following the career of Michael Winslow, the guy from the Police Academy movies who made funny noises with his mouth. Now, the guy from the Police Academy movies who made funny noises with his mouth, interestingly, side note, was the Onion's Man of the Year for 1 year in the 90s, billed as the guy from the Police Academy movies who can make funny noises with his mouth. He appeared in all 7 Police Academy movies.
There were 7?
There were 7 Police Academy movies. I do not recommend watching them back to back to back to back to back.
I won't.
But if you do, you will find that there are only, like, I think 3 actors who appear in all 7 Police Academy movies. Michael Winslow stuck with the whole thing and has maintained this kind of remarkable career over the course of now into its 5th decade as a guy who makes funny noises with his mouth. And he's kind of carved out a career. He's put out albums. He's done a lot of voice work. He is really genuinely one of the most talented voice actors alive. What is making me happy this week, not only is looking down memory lane at all the great work of Michael Winslow, but the fact that Michael Winslow just appeared on America's Got Talent, age 62, and doing a bit where he's like, you're like flipping stations and he's doing kind of the different sounds of the different genres of music. Let's actually hear a little bit of that.
Rock and roll.
And so I just love the fact that America is getting together and briefly re-celebrating the life and career of Michael Winslow, the guy from the Police Academy movies who makes funny noises with his mouth. That is what is making me happy this week. If you want links for everything we recommended, plus more recommendations, subscribe to that newsletter that Aisha mentioned. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at IDislikeStephen. You can follow Aisha at CraftingMyStyle. You can follow Andrew at Andrew Limbong. You can follow editor Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy, producer Candace Lim at The Candace Lim, and producer Jared Gare at Jared M. Gare. That's G-A-I-R. You can follow producer Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We'll see you all next week when we'll be running through a brief modern history of boy bands.
Investigations into police use of force and misconduct were secret in California until now. We've sifted through hours of interrogation tape to find out who does the system of police accountability really serve and who does it protect. Listen now to every episode of the new podcast, On Our Watch, from NPR and KQED.